So the reading is from Luke chapter 12, and that is page 1044 in the church Bibles. Beginning at verse 13, the parable of the rich fool. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And then I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you've plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry." But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be, that whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich towards God." Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. Now how much more valuable you are than birds. Who are you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wildflowers grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink, and do not worry about it. For the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide persons for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also."
Thank you so much, Rhoda. Of water, that would be a real help. Thank you very much. So if you've been following this series and doing the Bible readings, I know some of you have, I hope you have found that helpful. I don't know if your imagining was quite the same as a cartoon, but I hope you enjoyed that. Last week, Paul Garrett spoke about the power of love. We're discovering about the power of Jesus' love. And he spoke about kindness. I know so many of you found what he said helpful. And he's kindly going to come back again sometime. So we'll be fixing up a date. Thanks very much, Christine. We love being here. Wonderful. Today, we're going to talk about contentment. Now, contentment, you probably think is nice, but not very powerful, and not probably something you really want very much, a bit like we were talking about patience the other week. But I want to show you just how powerful contentment is. Jesus has great ambition, very dynamic, but he's very content. How can you have both? Well, you can. But the opposite of contentment is greed. Don't know what comes into your mind when you think of greed. I think of Mr. Greedy. Who read the Mr. Men with like pink or purple Mr. Greedy? It's my favorite. You know, you probably all know greedy people. I mean, might say our society's greedy as well. But here's the thing. I've never met anyone who has seriously said to me, I'm greedy. And I meet people and people talk to me and tell me all sorts of different problems. I've never met anyone who said, my real problem's greed. You and I know all sorts of greedy people, don't we? But you aren't greedy, I'm not greedy. Yeah, our country's full of greed. Funny that, isn't it? Funny that. What Jesus is saying is greed is hidden. He says, watch out, because greed is difficult to spot, but it's powerful, it's sinister, and it's totally entwined in your life, my life, and in society. So in this story, at one level we think, yeah, greedy bloke building the barns. But actually, if you look at the story, it doesn't look so greedy. Starts off with a man and his brother arguing about who should have the fair share of their possessions. That's called making a will, isn't it? Or sorting out will, we do that. The man himself, he's got productive land, he wants to make it more profitable. That's what companies do. That's what we do with our savings, isn't it? Doesn't seem greedy. Then he wants to have a good life. That's what you do, that's what I do. Go on holiday, spend the money, have a nice bit of cake or whatever. It's part of life. And then he wants to save it up while he's productive so he can have all the benefits at a time of his life when he can be less productive. That's called a pension. Actually, Jesus is saying greed is such a part of society you can't spot it. So watch out. Those two men who came to him, no one of them would have said, you wouldn't have said they were greedy. But Jesus is saying your problem's greed, and we'll see why later on. Because we need to work out what greed is first. It's difficult to watch out for something when you don't know what you're looking for. Let me give you a confession. And to illustrate that point. So, Theo and Bonnie, as you, many of you know, our children both play football. And as a parent, you go along and you're expected to help. And I'm really happy to do that, putting up the goal nets, you know, getting the kit bag, that type of thing. But there's one thing I do not like helping out with, and I try to avoid it, running the line. Now, running the line is being a linesman. So linesmen, they assist the referee, they have a flag, and what they've got to look out for, as well as throw-ins and fouls, they've got to look out if somebody has committed an offside offence. Now, I'm not going to explain to you what offside is. When they spot offside, they raise a flag, the referee can see them, and he knows that it's a foul's committed. The reason I'm not going to explain to you offside is I don't really get it myself. Now, that takes quite a lot of doing to admit that to you, because blokes do not admit they don't know the offside rule. But I don't, and I've done. I've run the line, and I was hopeless. And you've got parents shouting at you, you've got kids shouting at you, you've got the ref shouting at you, and I don't like doing it, because I don't know what to watch out for. I love football, love playing it, but I don't know what to watch out for. Same with greed. If you don't know what to watch out for, how can you spot it? So Jesus tells his story to help you spot what greed is. Now, Jesus didn't come to condemn you. He came to help you. He came to save you. And if you're open and willing, Jesus will this morning help you see that greed might be part of your life. And then he wants to help free you from that greed. But in actual fact, he wants to do something far, far better than that. So let's see how this story helps us spot greed. Well, the first thing greed does is it means you have no appreciation for what's being given to you. Look at the man. It says the ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. The man's land did the work for him. Doesn't say he went out and worked really hard and tilled it. It produced a good harvest. Now, he probably did have to work hard, but there's no recognition from him that he'd already been given a lot of what he had to make him wealthy. And you and I can easily fall into that trap. We probably do fall into it. So you can think, well, I'm a good parent. Well, that might be because you had good parents as a model. It might be someone living on the same street, same background as you, really loves their children, but struggles to be a good parent because they didn't have good parents as a role model. Or it might be that you say, I work hard, really provide well for my family. But you and I can forget we live in the southeast of England, which is a prosperous region. Somebody else living in another part of the world where there aren't so many jobs might be struggling just as hard, working just as hard, but not able to earn as much. Even in other parts of the UK, that would be true. And greed stops you appreciating that actually you've been given a lot of what you think you've worked for, like this man. Second thing that greed does is it means you have no thought for others. Look at the man. He has so much, but he doesn't for one minute anywhere in the story say, how can I use what I have to help others? Greed means he's thinking totally of himself. He says, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Greed means you have no thought for others, only for yourself. The third thing that greed does is it means you have no peace. The wealth that he's been given because he's greedy becomes a problem to him. Look, he says, what shall I do? I've got all this grain growing up. What do I do? It's a problem for him. And then he comes up with his own solution. Greed turns God's goodness into a problem. So rather than thinking, isn't it great I can go on holiday this year? You and I think, well, the holiday I'm going to go on this year, will it be as good as the last one? Will it be a fantastic holiday? Rather than saying, thank you, I can go on holiday. And then greed makes you envious. Jesus describes us running around after things like the pagan world. So people without God run around trying to fill their life with stuff. And greed, instead of appreciating what you have, means you constantly look around and you are envious of other people. Have I got enough? Have I got as much as them? Am I going to get enough? That's what greed does. Now, we're beginning to see what greed's like. And I can see that we're beginning to get an understanding. Actually, greed might be part of my life. I thought it used to just be about Mr. Greedy. And you might be thinking, great, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be peaceful, I'm going to be appreciative, I'm going to count my blessings. Those are all good things. But if you try and do that, you will fail. And you'll become bitter and frustrated. Because greed is a symptom of a deeper illness. You know what happens if you treat the symptoms, don't you? You just go on and on treating the symptoms. And you get more and more fed up because you keep thinking, I'm doing this, and having these pills, doing these exercises, and it's not improving my life. Why? Because you've got to treat the symptom. Now, I can't imagine any of you have ever had a tapeworm. but greed, and what causes greed, is like a tapeworm and the effects. So, what happens to tapeworm is a parasite and it gets into your stomach. And the tapeworm grows because it eats the food in your stomach. And it gets bigger and bigger. And you feel hungry and hungry because the tapeworm is eating your food. These tapeworms can go pretty big, 12 foot, 15 foot. Seriously. If you go on the internet, you can see pictures of them about town. And what you'll do is you'll feed the tapeworm, if you've got one, because it's making you hungry. So you eat more and more and more. What happens to the tapeworm? It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So you're trying to treat the symptoms, but you need to treat the cause. You need to get that tapeworm out. And there's all sorts of other, you feel listless as well, all sorts of other side effects. And that's what greed is. So greed is a symptom of a much deeper problem. Well, what's the problem? Well, the problem is, if God is not filling your life, you have a God-shaped hole which will be filled by something else. It's called an idol. Anything that tries to take the place of God in your life is an idol. That idol will try and get you to fill your life, to make the idol feel full. And it will never succeed. Because only God can fill that space. And you want more and more and more, and you will never be satisfied. Let me give you some examples to help. These are ones that I know I'm affected by a little bit. So if it's family are the idol of your life, you will be greedy to make sure they're all in touch, to keep on top of their birthdays, to try to see them, and you'll be worried constantly if they forget you and if you're left out. If health and fitness are the idol in your life, you'll be greedy for exercise, for diet. Are you fit enough? Are you healthy enough? How do you compare to others? If it's friendship that's the idol in your life, you'll be greedy for friends. How can you keep your friends? How can you make sure people like you? Do people still like you? Are your friends being stolen away from you? If money and possessions are the idol in your life, you'll be greedy and wanting to spend money and buy stuff. You'll see what other people have got and you'll try and keep up. If peace and security are the idol in your life, you'll be greedy for a calm life. You'll get really annoyed if anything disturbs your peace. And actually, this whole subject of greed and what's causing greed touches on the transgender debate that is big in our society at the moment. I want to talk a little bit about that, because the desire to change from one gender to another is actually a result of an idol in a person's life, just as it is with all the other things. I'm not talking here about the tiny, tiny, tiny number of cases where the chromosomes aren't right, so somebody might neither be man nor woman fully because of the chromosomes. That's not what this debate's about. The transgender debate is about people who are male and want to identify as female, and vice versa. And our hearts go out to people who feel, if only I was a man, I'd be fulfilled. If only I was a woman, I'd be fulfilled. But it's a false promise. It's another idol like all the others. And what will happen is you'll have the change, you still won't be fulfilled. Because only God can give you that fulfillment. God has created us male and female. And there's evidence as well coming through now that those people who've had changes then later on regret it, but you can't change back. Phil Haynes, who's a doctor, is telling me. So our hearts go out to people like that, looking for fulfillment in a place where fulfillment can't be found. So what I want to do now is just ask you to take a moment, if you'd like to do so. What are you greedy for? What's the idol operating in your life? Let me just demonstrate some integrity by saying I did this myself. And the idol in my life, as I was sharing on Friday at the prayer meeting, which was a really good time, by the way, I'm greedy to be successful. The idol in my life is to be successful. And it means I'm never satisfied with where I am. I don't appreciate what God is doing. I don't appreciate how God is using me. It means I'm always driven. I can never rest. Now, that's different from not being ambitious. But what it means, I drive you on. So I'm offering an apology now. I sometimes drive this church on too much, too hard. Oh no, is that it again? And I just need to let God fill that space. So what's your idol? What is it that's driving you? Maybe not, maybe that God's fully in control of your life. But let's just take a moment to be quiet. I'm not going to ask you to do anything with that. That's just for you and God. But just a moment, what might your idol be? Just a moment, I'm going to ask God to throw his light onto us. Jesus, you came not to condemn the world, but to save it. You came not to make our life a misery, but to help us. Show us now, if there are idols in our hearts that, like tapeworms, are causing a hunger which doesn't satisfy. Well, as we bring our thoughts to a close, I thought you might like to enjoy some of the youth alpha fun that our young people are enjoying. So I've taken a clip from one of the youth alpha films that picks up on this idea of contentment, of greed, and of Jesus. It's a really interesting story here, which I think you might find helpful. Thanks.
My life today. I heard someone say that in each one of our hearts, it's like we have a happiness bucket that we're constantly trying to fill. It can sound like this. If I just had more money, or nicer clothes, or a new girlfriend, then I'd be happy.
Yeah, or if I just got better grades, or knew all the right people, or had like the perfect job, then my life would be totally complete. But the weird thing is, no matter how much stuff we try to fill our happiness buckets with, we're still left wanting. And as good as those things can be, we can't shake the feeling that there must be more to life than this. It's like there's a void in each one of our hearts. There's this deeper, even spiritual, hunger that we're all trying to satisfy. Jesus Christ, who's the central figure in the Christian faith, said this. He said, "I am the bread of life." And it's as if he's saying, "I'm the one who fills that void. I'm the one who satisfies that hunger."
When I was young, the age of about 12, my mother had a major nervous breakdown, and she was hospitalized for extended periods of time. My father also struggled with alcoholism. I had two brothers, and we were basically left in many ways to raise ourselves. Those experiences marked me, and going to bed at night, I remember through my tears saying, "God, if you're there, I hate you." And I decided the childhood that I had was not going to be my life. At the age of 18, I committed to the idea of becoming a millionaire by the age of 30. So by the age of 35, the idea of being a millionaire had been achieved. I owned a company with over 500 employees. I had a beautiful home, beautiful wife, two kids. I could go where I want, when I want. I had way more money than I ever hoped for, but I wasn't happy. And I realized that there's still a deep darkness inside of me, a void. So now I'm forced into this really profound, deep journey. Like, what's life all about? I have epilepsy. And for some reason, I started having seizures more frequently. We have a lady who worked for us at that time in our home. Her name is Bonnie, and she was a very sweet lady, a Christian lady. Bonnie saw me after having a seizure one day, and she called my wife, and she said that God had told her to come pray for me. And I said, "Well, I know it's not going to do any good, but I like Bonnie." So she prayed for us, and for some reason I cried through that process. Didn't know why I was crying, but Bonnie left and we thanked her for coming over. So the next day I saw a friend, a neighbor, who went to the same church Bonnie does. And I asked my friend, I said, "Hey, are you going to church tomorrow?" And he says, "Yeah." I said, "Well, do you mind if I come with you?" He says, "Sure." He's quite happy to bring me. So the next morning we're standing in church together. And as the worship music begins, for some reason I begin crying. But I'm doing everything in my power not to cry, but tears are running down my face. And in that moment, for the first time, God's love for me was so real. The reality that He loved me was nothing short of completely and totally mind-blowing. I worked hard and pursued wealth my whole adult life, trying to fill a profound emptiness inside of me, the darkness that I walked with every day, only to discover that emptiness could only ever be filled by a relationship with the living God.
So I hope you found that helpful, the powerful story of greed, contentment. Did you catch that verse as well? Jesus said, "I'm the bread of life." He's the only one who fills you up. He came like a doctor for the sick. He is the cure to the illness which is having other idols in our heart. He is the only one who has the power to get rid of them. He takes them to the cross, he takes them to death with himself, and then he rises again. Only cure for the tapeworm, the only cure for the idol in your life, idols, is to go to Jesus, to die to yourself, to die with him, and let his resurrection power come up. You might be a Christian, so hang on a minute, I gave my life to Jesus, how can there be still idols? Well, I think the moment we give our life to Jesus, it's a bit like D-Day in the Second World War, so the Allies land, Russians are coming in the other side, and it's really finished, Europe's going to be liberated, but there's just a bit of mopping up to do, it's not quite finished, and you know, D-Day is it, that's the victory's been won, and when Jesus comes in, the victory's won, but until we go to heaven, there's some mopping up to do. I just want to show you the power of what Jesus does. So Jesus, when he comes in, instead of having no appreciation, you appreciate what you do have. Do you notice a second part of that story? The two go together. He says, look, do you see the wild flowers? Do you see the beauty in the wild flowers every day? When Jesus is in your life, you begin to see all sorts of things you just took for granted. And you're thankful for them. You've got water in the tap. You've got flowers. Sunshine. But even when the sun's shining, God still loves me. Friends. Food. You begin to have a greater appreciation because the appreciator, the one who is the most thankful in all the world, the one who's given you everything, filled your life, is within you. And then, because you've got that appreciation, instead of having no thought for others, you're full of thoughts for others. Jesus gave his life for everyone. He's always thinking of others. That's why he came. And you begin to think of others first. You might think, well, I'll be too busy to think of anything about myself. Do you know what? Sometimes that's not a bad thing. Sometimes we're so wrapped up in ourselves, aren't we? But even so, that isn't the case. As we begin to think of others, it releases kindness, generosity. You begin to trust Jesus. Actually, Jesus has given me everything. I can afford to be generous with everything. He's my backstop. He's my safety net. But Jesus has a generous heart. Can you see the power of contentment? And then from the overflow of that generous heart that Jesus gives you, because it's his generous heart, is peace, deep peace. Carl and I were praying before the service. Carl, as you might not know, comes and sets up. And he and I usually pray as well before the service. And I think Carl was talking there about the peace that Jesus gives. Not as the world gives. Jesus says, consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. See, as you grasp how deeply you're loved, you have a contentment that means you don't need to envy others. I don't need to envy other church leaders for their success. I'm here enjoying you, appreciating you. I hope you appreciate me. And appreciating the village where we can show God's love. And just enjoy God growing out through that. So whatever it is, you can enjoy what God's given you. And you don't have to compare yourself. That's not being unambitious. Jesus was very ambitious. He'd come to save the whole world. And he's told us we have to go to Jerusalem, which is the nearest city to Jesus, Judea, his country, Samaria, the next country in the whole world, to tell people about him. But there's a contentment in that ambition. Your worth doesn't depend on what you do. That's the difference, you see. Because previously, your worth depends how successful I am is how worthy I am. But I'm worthy because Jesus loves me. And Jesus loves you. So when Jesus fills your life, you become free. If the Son of Man sets you free, you should be free indeed. So it's an invitation this morning. What I thought you might want to do, so we might have thought of those idols, and if you wanted to, you could write them down. And then in the final song, you could just screw them up, and if you feel brave enough, you could put them in this bucket which has got the cross on it. It's kind of symbolic in saying, actually, I'm letting Jesus fill my life, and I'm putting the idol in the bucket. And it'll take some time for Jesus to do that. If you don't want to do that, that's fine. There's paper and pen under, and we'll do that in the last song while we're taking collection. Make sure you give it to the collection bowl. Don't anyone, I can't give to collection, I'm just going up to collection. I'm joking. So if that's what you want to do, you can. If you've never invited Jesus in to fill your life up, you might want to write a little prayer. Jesus, I'm sorry, you're the God of the whole world, and I've never given you a thought, or I've pushed you down, put these idols in your place, I'm really sorry, forgive me, fill my life up, give your life to Jesus. So that's if you'd like to do that. If you don't want to, that's perfectly fine, we'll do that while we sing. But we'll take a moment just to be quiet and let Jesus fill you. Then I'm going to ask Judith to come and Sarah, and they'll lead us in our final song. Jesus, thank you. You didn't come to condemn the world. You came to save it. You came to help your flock here, your people here this morning. And I sense you wanting to set people free this morning. Not in a condemning way, but in a loving way. To fill them with the appreciation, the generosity, and the peace that comes from you. Jesus, thank you that you come to fill us. And I pray that you'd fill each person's heart this morning. in the way that only you can do.
Yes.
Amen. Let's take a moment just to be quiet and let everything settle in.